Okay, fantastic. Well, welcome everybody. Toby Norwell here, Chief Operating Officer for NATMA again, and welcome to our Inner Circle People Forum group call. We have a lot to accomplish today, and I really wanted to make sure that everybody on the line, that you've got sort of a quick outline of what your next quarter marketing plan looks like in front of you. We'd like to share kind of what everybody's working on in macro and in micro, a few of the things that we're working on that we're already getting good results on. We've got a good number of people on the call. It looks like we picked up a good amount of background noise here, so give me just a minute to mute all that out. Okay, sorry about that. We had some a good amount of background noise there. Everyone is muted now. You can hit star 6 anytime during the call to kind of raise your hand and jump in to our conversation. And please do, again, now. I'd really like to make sure everybody kind of has their second quarter marketing plan sitting in front of them, or at least whatever part of the outline you're ready to share. And we'll kind of do a little bit of round robin toward the end of our time today. But, Mr. Oliver, I just had maybe three really quick updates that might be useful for everybody, schedule, calendar-wise, some logistics, if that would be useful now. Two things from just a logistical standpoint, for events and things like that. Our next event is in May, and we're in Washington, D.C. We're basically going to be at the Dulles Airport Marriott. It's right on airport property. It's right there. And the Dulles Airport exit, I think, is, not sure if I'll correct me if I'm wrong, but like two or three exits away from Jeff Smith School out in Sterling, Virginia. So we're right in the vicinity. You might want to have a rental car. We're probably going to make a run over there at least once or twice during the weekend. So we'll have a few cars and things like that. So I don't think it'll be a crisis, but we're definitely going to spend a little bit of time over there walking through some of the logistics and some of the step-by-step processes for that upgrade process, especially as it applies to staff operating those systems. I know that's been a very hotly requested, frequently requested, and a deep need in the midst of our, especially our Inner Circle members who are moving into multiple locations, who currently are operating multiple locations, and those people, former members who are sort of in a very steep growth curve right now. So it's going to be of immense value, and we're all pretty excited about it. Let me give you the dates here just really quickly in 1 second. So that's in May. Hang on just a second here. I've got it all in one spreadsheet. Inner Circle members are the 17th and 18th. So May 17th and 18th. And Peak Performer members will be the 18th and 19th. So Friday, Saturday for Inner Circle, Saturday, Sunday for Peak Performers. Again, at the Dulles Airport Marriott. I'll send around the link and everything that you can talk to them directly to book rooms and things like that over the next few days. But May 17th and 18th for Inner Circle members, 18th and 19th for Peak Performers. The second thing would be on the 17th, if you, it just doesn't matter because you're already there. But what I was going to say is this is definitely the type of event that you want to bring as many staff members as humanly possible with you. We're going to be accomplishing a lot of material that is especially appropriate for your staff members. In many, many, many of our Inner Circle meetings and Peak Performer meetings, we're accomplishing things that simply are not appropriate for staff in many cases. So this is the opposite model. This is sort of focused on staff members. We're going to have a couple of breakout sessions or have the opportunity to do a couple of breakout sessions for just staff and then just owners. But this is definitely the type of event that you want to bring as many staff members as you can to. Also on the 17th, which is the first day for Inner Circle, we have sort of an industry appreciation event in the same area in the next room. And if you have any colleagues or members of your martial arts association or people that you compete in tournaments with and things like that, that especially if they live in the North, anywhere in the Northeast, although obviously D.C. is usually a pretty easy flight from pretty much anywhere on the planet, right? This would be a good event to try to get them to. And if there are a referral from you, we can even, comp them into the deal or give them a special rate or something like that, so that we can, we can get them there and sort of show them what this whole thing is all about, and you know, help get their school moving. So if you do have, you know, those people like Joe, you know, Joe Baruchy and Oliver Drexler, they had folks in their association, you know, that they were friends with, that they, you know, saw were struggling or saw were growing but really needed that extra push to get over the hump, and you know, were really supportive and helpful and really kind of wanted to help them take that step, this would be the best time to do that. So, again, that's on the 17th. It's the first day of the Inner Circle meeting. We have a separate room and things like that. So if you do have folks who fit that profile, this would be the perfect opportunity to reach out to them and get them there. I'll send you a link that you can send around to them over the next couple of days. So that's that part. The third piece that I had, and the final piece that I had for logistics, is the internet marketing sessions that we've been doing have been going relatively well. I will fully admit that we are being a little bit more deliberate than perhaps I had planned to at the beginning. We've tended to drill down into the search engine optimization logistics and the mechanical logistics a little deeper than I thought we would, but it's been because of questions from folks who are going through the process. And the upside is we've been having really good results so far. For at least three people, and again, these are the three I've heard from quickly, you know, the websites pretty much aren't even completely built yet, but three folks have told me so far that they're already ranked number 5 or above in Google when looking for martial arts in their area. And George Kleindienst, Mike Pace, and Dwight Woods are all ranked at 5 or better for different martial arts terms in their area. And we really don't even have any content on the pages yet, right? All we've built so far is a framework, but we've search engine optimized the framework the right way, you know, the appropriate way, with all of the URLs being completely optimized and those types of things. And we really haven't even gotten to the search engine optimization segment yet. So we're having really good results already, even at this early stage in the process. So if you haven't gone through this stuff, you know, all of the webinars are archived up on the members' website. And if you already have a site that's already functional, meaning you have blogging functionality and you have the ability to add pages ad libitum and stuff like that, then you can skip all of the WordPress stuff and just go do all the search engine optimization stuff, which I'm segmenting out of the videos. So that's what's happening with all of that. And this Friday, tomorrow, I guess, Jesus, Friday, Thursday already, tomorrow we're actually doing our fourth installment, or fifth installment, I can't remember which, and we're going to be, we have a few questions to answer, two pieces of design to help everybody with. I built some templates for everybody so that you can just literally drag and drop the entire thing on the page and not have to edit anything. And then third, we're going to get into some very deep search engine optimization strategy. There are some plugins available for WordPress that basically do all the search engine optimization for you as long as you set the pages up the right way to begin with. So it's a huge shortcut, but you've got to make sure that you have, you know, the keyword density, the keywords where you need them. So that's what we're doing tomorrow on the Internet Marketing webinar, and you all have all the details for that in your inbox already. So from a logistics standpoint, that's all, those are the only three things I needed to accomplish. The last thing on my list as part of our marketing conversation for today is we've had some really good results from a few of our people forum members that I've been working with for St. Patrick's Day. And I just kind of wanted to quickly go through what they were doing and the types of results they were getting. But basically, I mean, for lack of any better, for a better description, I think this probably describes it as thoroughly as you would need. Basically, I had a few folks who were in the adult-only market, who are people forum members, meaning, you know, MMA schools, kickboxing, Muay Thai, those types of locations, that really focused on St. Patrick's Day, knowing that there would be a high population of, quote-unquote, adults, right, celebrating St. Patrick's Day in different areas. So we sort of collectively highly targeted affluent, stable communities, subdivisions, neighborhoods, things like that, that had, you know, again, the right customer base, that were having St. Patrick's Day activities. And again, you know, there is sort of a, I guess, perhaps an ugly underbelly of St. Patrick's Day with an awful lot of alcohol consumption and things like that. But if you cherry pick the right areas, like for example, in one of my very good friends down here in Orlando, there's two very high-end suburbs on the southeast side, I guess, of Orlando, that are, you know, very upscale golf clubs, those types of things. And they collectively had a St. Patrick's Day festival. And they had some vendor, you know, they hired vendors to come out. It was right outside of the golf club. I mean, it was exactly the right customer for one of our clients, for one of our members, right? So that type of activity was very productive for them. They, for lack of a better description, they just did our booth model out at the St. Patrick's Day Festival, right? And it was, you know, just, you know, lead generation, lead collection mechanism with appointment set and then little mini sale. And they actually made a very high percentage of sales that day selling the little, you know, $19 certificate because it was a fundraiser for the for that neighborhood fund, you know, that neighborhood, you know, association. So, you know, they were all members and they were all already there and, you know, that, you know, it was just their deal, right? So very effective process. And then later that evening, there was a relatively big UFC, you know, I guess it was George St. Pierre, I guess, against one of the Diaz boys, which both I like, but I just, for some reason, wasn't able to see it. But I've always been a big kind of big fan of George St. Pierre. But so it was a pretty big UFC fight, and in the same locations, we were sort of ramping up our staffing to have different teams to be able to do these types of community events. So we had, you know, Team A at the St. Patrick's Day Festival, Team B, C, and D at three different sports bars, three different sort of, you know, UFC fight nights around the community, doing those deals. So in one day, created a very successful, very, you know, a high number of leads in just a day over St. Patrick's Day. So taking that as a model, Easter is coming up in, what, about a week and a half. So for all the family schools, this is a huge opportunity for us. Virtually every church in your area, and we've already talked about this, so I don't want to beat a dead horse, but virtually every church in your area is going to be doing something for Easter, some kind of a festival or something. And then virtually every community, obviously almost all municipalities, but also, if you dig deep enough, you'll find neighborhood by neighborhood in many cases. So, for example, I did some light research in this area down here, and, you know, Aliquot has their own little Easter egg hunt for the kids in their subdivision, and Aliquot is like where Shaquille O'Neal and Tiger Woods' houses are, right, or were. You know, those types of subdivisions and communities are great opportunities for this type of a thing. So, leading up to Sunday, you know, leading up to that day is kind of when many of the churches will be doing their things, right? So, you know, on that Saturday, on that Friday, there are all sorts of, events and festivals and things like that happening in those types of communities. So anyway, just long story short, that 250 intros booth model, I just emailed it around to everybody again, this model is a very successful, if executed appropriately, a very successful lead generation tool that right now is a prime time to really go out and kill it. And something like this, you know, for Easter specifically, if I had two or three subdivisions or three or four communities or three or four housing developments plus a community plus a municipality, I would like today start training volunteers, you know, a staff member and maybe, you know, five or six parents and, you know, a bunch of kids, a bunch of students, on how to execute this thing for me and just, you know, go do seven of them, you know, go do six or seven of them on Sunday, not just one, right? You know, the booth model is not something that you have to be, you know, Tom Hopkins to make work, which is one of the reasons I think that it's, you know, it's working particularly well. It's pretty easy to train people to do this thing. So, that was really all I wanted to kind of contribute for the day. Since our guys on St. Patrick's Day had such good results, I thought it would be an interesting parallel that I think a lot of people perhaps don't think about in the adult market. But
absolutely, and there's, you know, there's all kinds of opportunities like that. You just got to be constantly aware of it. And you know, one of the habits I developed probably 30 years ago, and maybe it was just boredom, but it worked out well for me, was with six schools, I was visiting them, you know, at the time fairly frequently. As time went on, I tapered back on that and, you know, had most of it where they're coming to me. But, you know, let's say that I was trying to be at each location at least once a week. And I got in the habit of taking a different route to the school, you know, each time. And of course, there's only, you know, so many iterations of that. But what I figured out is where the community centers were, where the churches were, where the big parks were, and got used to just driving by all the big parks and the big churches and the big community centers, and leaving myself enough time to stop in and look at the posters and pick up the flyers and talk to the person who's at the front desk at the community center, and the same thing with big churches, and the same thing with at least some portion of the elementary school. And what you find pretty quickly is that, and by the way, you know, stopping into the local Safeway or Team Supers or whatever the grocery store chain is, especially the higher end ones, but looking at the notices that people have posted, the little community newspapers, the freebies, looking at the notices and getting the newsletter for the church and getting the newsletter and the notices for the community center, is what you start to realize is there's, if you're not paying that close attention, you know, especially if you don't live in the same community, and frankly, I never did. I never lived within 20 or 30 minutes of any of the locations. But you very quickly start to realize that there's all kinds of events that you wouldn't have stumbled across otherwise. And the second thing you start to notice is that, unfortunately, employees tend to be more blind to opportunity than owners are. And at least three-quarters of the events that we ever came across and did very productively were things that I went and rustled up, not things that the branch manager, the head instructor, program director told me about. You know, one routine we had was there was two or three little kids' magazines and newspapers, so I would pick up 30 or 40 of them every time they came out, and we'd have, you know, one meeting devoted to, you know, to just going through with highlighters. So I'd give out, you know, 20 highlighters and 20 copies of the kids' newspaper or the alternative newspaper or the newspaper inserts or summer camps, whatever it might be, and just, you know, get in the habit of walking all the staff through a couple of times a month, all of their little community newspapers, plus the kids' paper, plus the alternative newspaper, plus the special inserts. And, you know, and then it was, you know, the weekend section in the newspaper on Friday and Sunday as well, which had a lot of the events listed. Obviously, a lot of that is shifted to Internet. But it's so important to have that level of awareness of what's going on in your community. And, of course, you supplement that by just asking your students, you know, what special is going on in your community this month, and then narrowing it down. What special plans do you guys have for Easter? What special plans do you have for St. Patrick's Day? What special plans do you have for Mother's Day, for Father's Day? And just keep going through the list. But, you know, there's probably three or four times as many things that are fairly useful for you if you pay real close attention. And again, get in the habit of, you know, a lot of the big fairs and festivals here, you know, one of the ways they would promote it is a big banner up along the street at the big parks locally or in front of the rec center locally. And if I wasn't in the habit of driving by and looking, I would miss it. So I think that's just a key, is developing habits. And again, part of it is just being hyper-aware, but the way you get hyper-aware is you develop habits that put things like that in front of your awareness, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and you know, Ms. Halbert, just to kind of back up for a second there, I remember you telling me virtually the same story, or at least a similar habit, I don't know how many years ago now, but a good number of years ago. And again, for all of our guys in Maltese, or you know, whatever, it particularly applies to Maltese, I always love to take that type of stuff and create a system, you know? I love systems. I love building systems. And I took that particular concept and forced it down to the staff. So every Tuesday on my staff meetings, On Monday, I never did it on Mondays because the weekend happened and everybody forgets a lot of stuff, and Mondays are always, you know, like, you know, trying to get everything set up for the week, right? So on Tuesdays, part of the staff meeting, 7 minutes of the staff meeting, was I wanted all the staff to do exactly what you described. And we had, like, a route. We ended up, like, building a spreadsheet, and it had, you know, all the churches, all the daycare centers, all the youth groups, the public, the big parks, the monument sign that the city controls, right? You know, there's a sign as you drive into, you know, Orange City. There's a sign that you drive into Orlando, a big billboard, you know, and it has on it the listing of community things, you know? And there's also a television channel, Cable 13, where they have a scroll that scrolls community events, right? Those types of things. And all of those things we put into a spreadsheet, and on Tuesday, or on Monday, we would delegate who would do what. But on Tuesday, every staff member on the way to the staff meeting had to run their route and bring to the table the things that you just described, the flyer from the church, the elementary school event calendar for the month, you know, those types of things. And again, just like you said, you know, it was spread everything out on the table, put up the whiteboard, okay, Mr. Gibson, you went to this church, this elementary school, and this elementary school. Let's go through your list. You know, what do they have going on next month? What do they have going on the month after? You know, that type of stuff. So that's an incredibly powerful habit. And if you can have your team doing some of that stuff, I mean, you can't, you know, they're not going to do it as well as you. We all know that, right? But if they're bringing that kind of stuff to the table, it kind of ingrains it in their psyche. And I thought you were going to say something that you didn't say. But what really ends up happening is you end up with more friggin' opportunity than you know what to do with, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You end up with, oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, the biggest learned behavior is learning how to prioritize those.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
So rather than chasing all the little fish, you end up figuring out how to sort out the big fish and stuff like that.
Well, that's right. And what it starts to do is, you know, what you're just describing right there is an important piece of trying to overcome overwhelm, right? Like in a lot of cases, fundamental human behavior is, in some cases, when my plate is so full, I never get anything done because I'm so fearful of just taking the first bite, right? So what you just said is extremely important to keep in consideration. The flip side of that coin is, once you have that whiteboard full of stuff, you know what it starts to do? Is it starts to chip away at the opposite belief that your staff have that, oh, there's no opportunity anywhere. You know? Oh, people just aren't buying. People just aren't spending any money right now. People just aren't going outside their house right now. You know, when the economy hit sort of the skids in you know, 2007, late 2007, early 2008, you know, there were all sorts of people who just felt that absolutely every consumer was sitting in their home, huddled in the corner in the fetal position, crying, you know, don't hurt me, right? And when you do that type of activity, it starts to really kind of break down people's negative beliefs about what's happening in the economy, you know? And you start looking at the whiteboard, and I heard one of my guys, Chris Radabout, great instructor, really charismatic dude, but, you know, grew up in a relatively, you know, lower middle class household, had some real fundamental beliefs about poverty and wealth and things like that, right? Some sort of backwards beliefs. But I remember him uttering these words during the staff meeting, and I stopped everything and we focused on it for like an hour, right? But he goes, he looked at the list and he's like, God, who would have thought that many people would be going out on Sunday doing stuff?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's exactly what you want your people to be thinking. You want them to be looking at the board, looking at that list of opportunities, going, oh my God, let's put a number next to each one of these. How many people do you think are going to be at this art festival? 100? Okay, great, 100. How many people do you think might be at this church festival? 50? Okay, great, 50. How many people do you think might be at this auto show? 400? Oh, fantastic, right? And you start looking at those numbers, and you go, God, if I only went and got 10%, you know, what would that do? You know, what could that do to the business? You know, so I think that's a great, that's an amazing habit, and again, I really like that system of forcing the guys to go do that for you as well, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that going through all of the community newspapers and going through, again, you know, in Denver it's westward, but everybody has the back page or newspaper or the North End newspaper, whatever the alternative daily paper is, or a weekly paper usually, is part of what happens is you help them learn to think about it the way that you want them to think about it. And so going through and highlighting the opportunities, and I mean, there's the rule in brainstorming of, you know, don't shoot any ideas down the first round. But the second step is to go through and clarify why some of them aren't great ideas. You know, I remember, again, years ago, one of the program directors always was trying to get us to go to the teen arcade. And, you know, his premise was, we got nothing but little kids, why don't we get a bunch of 15, 16, 17-year-olds? And I kept having to kind of train everybody, well, why don't we get somebody whose parents are willing to pay for them, who are likely to follow through for more than 90 days, who are going to be, you know, good students. And they would explain to me that we have a bunch of teenagers, and I'd say, well, yeah, but they're all brown and black belts. We enrolled them when they were 7 or 9, not, you know, not when they were, 16. But it's those kinds of conversations that are helpful. Again, in the adult market, they start finding the things where you're going to have all of the college kids. And college kids seem like a real attractive market, and so you figure out how flaky and broke they are. And then your perspective changes. But, you know, something that we did, I'm not sure I was on the call, but something we did when I was in Washington is we just walked out to school and walked around the block. And what was true of her staff there is they had just never gone out and done a two blocks each direction and looked at all the businesses and the residences and the restaurants and the bars and just all the opportunities. And, you know, so many times, one of the things that in the kids market I always do is I pull the InfoUSA and the Google list of every elementary school, public and private, sort out the charter schools, all that stuff, find every daycare in the immediate area, find every church in the immediate area, and go through that list of organizations. And, you know, and if you ask them, those the staff used to come up with 2 or 3 top of their head, but when you give them a list of 52 or give them a list of 28 or whatever it is, they start to recognize just how much opportunity there is in the immediate area. And then you can kind of help them sort out by priority. You know, well, look here, this church has 7,000 members. You know, look here, this has, you know, this one has a school, a kid's school attached to the private school that has 1,200 kids. Oh, my goodness. You know, what can we do with that? So you start to sort that out. Now, Nori, the two things that we had promised. One is that, or not promised, I guess. One that I promised is we're going to spend a chunk of time here going through the marketing plan for grand opening and or a re-grand opening blitz. Which ties into the spring marketing plan. The second thing that I've talked to now, Jeff in Portland and Crystal and Lower Manhattan and obviously Eric and I have been kind of in the middle of this for a while. But we have a lot of very high performance, busy adult-oriented schools who are now adding the kids market. Nick Massey is another one. Nick's on the phone. Nick, I may have talked him out of it, but a fair number of Krav Maga schools, MMA schools, and Jiu-Jitsu schools, Muay Thai schools that are now looking to implement a kids program. And I think it's way beyond the reach of our call today, other than to the extent that it addresses the marketing issues. But what I promised is that we would do a bonus call focused on specifically one, how to add a kids program if you don't have it, but probably more importantly is the really how to, you know, get 100 kids in 6 or 8 weeks to ramp it up. Because, you know, several of the schools have, and again, I think Eric and I were like this as well before, is have a kids program, but it's kind of like the 35-year-old mom or dad who's coming in and, you know, the marketing is, oh, by the way, if you want to bring your kid in, there's class over there for them, rather than treating it like it's a separate business. And, you know, we all know what happens is if you don't have each and every slice of your business treated like a separate school and a separate profit center, then you end up with something that limps along and it either is not making a profit or in many times it's draining the school. So I wanted to throw out there that you and I can coordinate on a time and date, but within the next week or two, I had promised to do a little bonus call for everybody who has not had a primary focus on kids on how to think about it differently and how to get that up and running. And then, you know, we all know there's some minor curricular differences. What I do find is that people who are running an adult program and they add kids, what they want to do is dumb down and water down, which isn't necessary. Perhaps they have a level of contact or something that needs to be pushed up to a later stage, but frankly, usually that's true of their adult program as well. You know, if you track the dropout rate in almost anybody's program, it's the first time somebody gets choked or punched in the nose is usually the second, you know, the second biggest point of dropout. First biggest point of dropout is in the first 50 days. So that was two things I wanted to throw out and mention, you wanted to go through individuals' marketing plans. We could either go through those and then spend about 30 minutes on the grand opening marketing plan at the tag end, or we could spend some time on that now, and then that leads into the individual marketing plan.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of feedback from exactly what folks are working on, but I don't think I have a preference for one or the other.
Okay. Well, why don't I spend some time right now on the kind of the grand opening or re-grand opening marketing plan. We have several big schools who are doing a third or fourth or fifth location and need a real way to think about the grand opening marketing plan. And the second element is that an awful lot of schools could use exactly the same concept as a jump start. And so, you know, one opportunity is, again, like for Jeff in Portland, is using the grand opening concept to launch the kids program. And you know, it doesn't have, even if you've had a kids program for a couple of years and it's been limping along, just pretend it's new and do this. One of the probably the best ideas my first ex-wife had was we had a period of time where five schools were kind of limping along. You know, there wasn't the kind of energy and activity we wanted, and it was, you know, post Karate Kid boom, and there was kind of a lag in results, and things that we had been doing before weren't working very well. And she said something to me that sounded like a stupid idea to begin with, but it was well, you're so good at grand openings. Why don't you just do a grand opening for all the schools again? And, you know, I thought about it a little bit, and the truth was every time I had opened a new school, we had added 100 students in the first month, worst case, maybe 5 or 6 weeks, and usually we're at 200 students within 90 to 120 days. And in every case, bar none, we're at positive cash flow, really month one. Some of that was helped by, obviously, some rent abatement, stuff like that. But when we implemented that idea, we did 486 enrollments in 6 weeks. And so, obviously, it turned out to be a good idea. Now, there were a lot of moving parts to it. But, you know, if you've had the same location for 22 years and you're at a little bit of a lull, if you can stack up a little bit of cash and suck up the energy, you can, in essence, the way I think about it for an established school is just kind of lay out what your marketing plan would be for the year and then do it in 6 weeks from the standpoint both of spending money plus spending labor. But Toby, let me walk through, and I had a third question for everybody in the call. These calls that we're doing, what's typically the time lag and where do I find the replay on the member site?
The system is that the time lag is about 60 days, mostly because we really don't want to encourage anybody to, you know, not be on the call live and just wait for it to go up.
Is that true for the peak performer inner circle calls?
That's true for the people from Winter Hong Kong, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, systemically, that's how we have it set up, yeah.
Okay.
Now I think truthfully, I think I have December stuff up. I don't think I have January stuff up yet.
Okay.
And mostly that's because we've been working on the internet stuff. So, you know, that's the systemic process.
Okay. And by the way, again, I've heard tremendously good feedback on the internet marketing call so far.
Yeah, I think it's going really well. We're getting good results so far, which is interesting. It's interesting that we have, you know, three or four people. It's really the only three I've heard from immediately, but that have are already getting indexed by Google and are already getting decent placements. So, I'm pretty enthusiastic about that.
Yeah. And while we're at it, Carol just emailed me a question, and Carol, if you're on the call, just unmute yourself and ask that question. Let's hone in on it because it ties exactly to what we're talking about now, and then let's kind of expand from there on the grand opening or re-grand opening blitz, and then we'll develop from there on the quarterly marketing plans. So, Carol, you had a specific question. And anybody else, we want these Inner Circle Peak Performer calls to be very interactive and to address specifically what your immediate concerns are. And it's certainly possible for us to go through a call and Toby and I talk and not address your specific needs.
I was having trouble getting it unmuted.
Yes.
But, you know, my situation, sorry for the cold, is that I've tried to hire students to sell the e-cards, which are the cards that give them a whole lot of stuff for 1 month.
Right.
And to put up the racks plus stock them with the rack cards. And they say, oh, yeah, okay, I'll do that. And then they never do. And the parents all seem to have full-time jobs. So, sometimes I think, well, I'll just hire somebody off Craigslist. But that's how I hired the guy that stole me blind as a bookkeeper. So, I'm wondering, how do I hire somebody who isn't just going to pretend to be doing it and not doing much, or how would I don't have the time to go out and see if they every rack and so forth and so on. How do you get good people when my own school isn't seeming to be providing them?
Well, that's the endless quandary. And it's not that there's not a system behind it, but if you look at, you know, every company that's doing well in the country, is one of the big keys is they figured out a system that works for them specifically to attract the right people, sort them quickly. SMLR, you like to quote, you know, Jack Welch, for one of his biggest things was fire the bottom 20% every year. That was part of their thing. The old HP thing back when it was thriving was there was the former HP alumni who all very proudly, you know, recognized the fact that HP had winnowed them from the crowd and they didn't make the cut, but they were proud of having been part of the HP way for the period of their tenure. I mean, that was something that they cultivated, to have the crowd almost like the once a Marine, always a Marine type of thing. On the other side of it, if you look at, like, Google, is part of Google's hiring strategy was, you know, they had these, how you would phrase it, but they had, you know, formulas and, you know, and genius level things on billboards. And if you could figure it out, it told you how to call them and apply for a job. I mean, literally, it was that type of deal. And you have the consulting companies and law firms competing for the top level Harvard people. So it's the thing that everybody tries to figure out and try to solve along the way. That having been said, is in your case, you're talking about predominantly hiring somebody who's a marketing person. And
I guess so.
Correct.
Well, I don't know, because really all they need to do is have a good personality, and maybe that is, I just need them to go out and be selling these things, you know, and putting up the rack cards. It's really more of a low-level job, as I saw it.
Well,
keep stocking them. And
right.
Go out and sell the cards.
I guess what I mean by that is you're you're looking at how do you find somebody who's going to do easy to do marketing activities out into the community.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And let's start with this. And anybody who has some good feedback for Carol on how to go about this, you know, chip in and give her some ideas on how you found some good people. And one of the things we'll do in May, Carol, is spend a lot of time on that. And it's something that Jeff Smith, as one example, he had some very good employees who just absolutely refused to do the marketing activities that we knew they needed to do. And one of the best things he did, and I forget how long it's been now, 9 or 12 months, is he went and hired, in this case, a student who was a mom of a student as well, who became essentially the full-time marketing director at the school. The thing that I will tell you is difficult is to hire anybody on a straight commission basis. And there are a few companies that manage to do that, but let me give you one example. I think it's Hoover Vacuum. And part of their model, and it's true of Fuller Brush, and there's been a bunch of companies like that that have been around forever, but their model is every day they're bringing in a location 30 or 50 people to interview, and they're constantly interviewing. And they're constantly hiring for straight commission people, and 98% of the people that they hire on straight commission go and sell a vacuum to their mom and to their neighbor and to their cousin, and that's the extent of what they do, and then they wash out. When I was when I first came to Denver, I was working for a 24-hour Nautilus, and they had 30 salespeople on staff. I was there April, May, June, July, August 8th. I started selling memberships at the school August 10th or 11th. I gave them my notice. So that's how long I was there. During the time I was there, I went from salesperson to substitute branch manager to branch manager to a different branch manager. And the time I left, I was the second most tenured salesperson on their entire staff. And they had a little deal where they had a red Mazda RX-7, so whoever was the top salesman a week at the RX-7. And out of whatever that was, 5 months, I probably had the RX-7 for 4.1 months, you know, I mean, four months in a week or something like that. And it just gives you the sense of how difficult it is to hire people on a straight commission basis and make them accountable. You know, and again, the vacuum thing, the Fuller Brush thing is the same deal. Is, you know, if people knock on the third door and get rejected the third time and then they stop doing it. MLM is all based on this, right? So the MLM industry, you know, and I have some friends in MLM that make $1 million a year personally, but they'll freely tell you, you know, 1% of the people you bring into an MLM is going to make, you know, more money than they ever dreamed of, and 99% aren't. The top 3% will replace whatever their current income is doing it, and 97 or 96% will never do anything more than be a product user. A few of them that I've talked to have been so discouraged they decided to just go sign up people to do $100 a month EFT products and not ever worry about business building, you know, trying to recruit business builders, because again, 99% of the people they recruit as business builders don't do anything anyway. So why bother? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So somebody was chipping in there. So chip in.
I think it was me. I had a video started to play spontaneously.
Oh.
But there is one thing, obviously with something like rat cards, lead boxes, stuff like that, there are a couple of resources, but, you know, lead boxes used to be worse because they were much more labor intensive. They took, you know, more trips to the business more frequently. You had to attend them every week, you know, that type of stuff. So that was actually more complicated than just rat cards. But, you know, I mean, in a lot of cases, there are, you know, college kids that are these flyer teams, these, you know, road crews that go out and do these types of flyer activities and stuff like that you can hire. And, you know, again, it's flaky, but if the sort of the synopsis for them or the benefit for them is they're getting paid per conversion. You know, they get like a flat rate to put them out, and then they get, you know, they get paid on a conversion basis. It's more likely that they're actually going to get out rather than in the dumpster, right? So, I mean, if they get, you know, $100 to go put, you know, 100 sets of them out, but they're going to get, you know, $50 or $100 anytime somebody brings their card in with their affiliate code on it and enrolls, they're more likely to actually get it done, you know? Mm. But it is still a little flaky. There's no question about that. I've actually had a lot of success with joint ventures with that type of activity, with, like, you know, the local pizza shop that does door hangers once a month, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we joint ventured with them because, you know, like, it was all of his guys that were going out and doing it, and we paid for all the printing. We printed our thing on the back of their thing or stuck it in the same envelope or whatever, you know? And it gave us the ability to leverage their labor as well, right? You know, so I mean, that's an opportunity, too. And then I think the third opportunity is, in, you know, I almost shudder to say this, but I always liked having a group of businesses that we get together once a month, and if we've got 20 or 25 business owners in the room, those are 20 or 25 trips I don't have to make, because they all just get their rat cards while they're at the meeting, you know, while we all come together and have lunch or whatever, we go to a chamber meeting or whatever the case is, and I just bring my case of rat cards with me, you know? And they can all take them. You give them the staff to put on their thing. So what it is, they're business-to-business partners that you have in the community. So let's say you know the local Subway owner, and he's a good guy, and you guys are working together to help cross-market. So everybody who enrolls in your school, they get a package full of stuff, and one of the things that they get is a certificate to go to Subway and get a discount or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you're going to do for them, and what they're going to do for you is put the rat cards in their spot. Well, you know, while I'm doing that, I'm going to say, well, you know what? The first Tuesday of every month at 8 o'clock, you know, we have a little meeting of all of our kind of partners. You know, why don't you come? You know, whatever. So if you can get 20 or 25 people to show up in that room, you know, they'll take your rat cards back to their business with them. You don't have to make the trip. But I mean, those are three things I think you might want to think about. I think there's a few opportunities there, you know.
Yeah, well, and I will tell you that and you're in this boat, more or less, Carol, is that the biggest difference between a multi-school owner and a single school owner is a multi-school owner would much rather get marketing done through automation than buying media. Where a single school owner, when you're there, whether it's one big school or whether you're the primary driver, is all of the community outreach stuff is much easier to get to accomplish. Because it's people give you lip service. You know, I've got this one corporate location that I inherited from a franchisee, and, you know, I hired a guy who's been in the industry forever and ordered 250 rack cards, and he told me upside down and backwards that he had placed them all and they only had like three left or something. And then we went through the storage at the school. There's, you know, I ordered 250, there's probably 247 of them there. So, you know, he had done nothing on that. And so, I will tell you, on the YKK version of the e-card deal is mostly that thing is effective when you've got the big demo team or you've got some group of loyalists and they're out selling it for, you know, their travel budget, or you have a competition team or something like that. Because in general, getting a group of human beings together who don't have a real vested interest to go sell anything door to door is difficult. And I don't mean, you know, necessarily knocking on doors, but you have to go to the shopping mall or get them to go to the restaurants and get them to, you know, I mean, getting your own staff, you know, to wear a staff t-shirt and tap kids on the shoulder at Starbucks and give them a guest pass is damn near impossible. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing that you want to be aware of is that most of this stuff, if you want to go the community outreach route, works better with full-time staff, and it tends to work better with hiring somebody whose primary or exclusive function is to do those types of things. The head of, in your case, the Krav Maga enthusiast, head instructor that you now try to get them to supplement the other thing, especially your guys as a structure. It is damn near impossible to get them to get engaged and go do that.
Right.
And I know I'm not answering your question, you know, with the simple, you know, what you'd love to accomplish. But the more you get somebody focused on predominantly being focused on the sales and marketing, and then the more you meet with them a couple times a week and get the list of where they've been and what they're doing, the better off you are from the standpoint of specifically placing rack cards. You know, there's Jimmy Mack, who you can pay him a couple grand and go fly out and go put 100 of them out. You know, on one hand, it's a shame to pay him that because it's just so damn easy. With our franchises, I talked a lot of them into doing it and knowing what was going to happen. And every time they did, by the second hour, they were pissed off that they had paid him.
Right.
Not because he wasn't effective, but because it was just so damn easy. But the thing was, is without them having paid him to come out and do it, they never would have done it on their own. Mm-hmm. Because the barrier was going out and asking the first one to do it. Right? So really what it was is they followed him around for an hour and they knew they could do it themselves. You know, because again, there was no science to it. You know, he had just said so many thousands of them. He walked in and said, "Hey, would you mind putting this there? And we know we're a local business. We'd like to help you promote. Do you have any coupons you'd like to distribute?" And fantastic. And he was off to the next place. And would, you know, would get an entire shopping center in 32 minutes flat and have 12 of them out.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else have any, again, exactly what you're asking is what Jeff Smith did recently with her name is Suda, and he has a program director who's really sharp. Before he had his son in there, his instructor was really sharp. His son moved to Texas, but neither one of them would go do any of the grassroots type of activity that we want them to do, and they had an endless list of reasons why it was non-productive or excuses why they couldn't accomplish it. And so he hired a full-time person who just does the marketing stuff, and she's been fabulous. Everything from putting out bandit signs to putting out rack cards to building relationships with movie theaters to building relationships with elementary schools. She's done a great job. In my case years ago, Carol, I used to have a full-time person who did nothing but maintain and build a relationship with all the local elementary schools.
Wow.
And so with five schools, that was their job. One of them I had hired from, it's one of the textbook companies, and they had a program where they would go into the different schools and set up book fairs and sell. I think at this point, you know, it was back then it was, you know, $2,000 sets of encyclopedias and book fairs where they could buy anything from $10 books to $50 books. But that was the background the guy had. So he was already comfortable in that environment.
Right.
And then I hired him full time to just go do that stuff.
Wouldn't that be
nice? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Master Oliver?
Go ahead.
Paul? Yes. Hi, Carol. How are you?
Hi. I'm good.
Good. One of the things that we use at eCard for that seems to be very successful is if we have, like, for instance, we did a wine and cheese after our Tai Chi class last night for new folks, and we then sold every single person that came in eCard to get them to come back, you know, and take part in our classes. And then we sign them up on the second or third class that they come to. We also do the same thing with our birthday parties. We give away birthday parties, you know, during the month, and we set it up so that when the parents are coming to pick up, we talk to the parents about getting involved with using the e-card. So it's a pretty easy sell, and it gets us folks to come in the door.
That's great. You use Living Social, right? But I don't understand how you use it, really.
We use that as well, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And go back to what Paul's saying there, is that you know, if he has a vision of it's going to be easy to get a human being to go out and, you know, stand in front of the Italian restaurant and sell a $10 or $20 pass, mm-hmm. you know, that's a very difficult thing to do. And it's not that it can't be done, so I'm not trying to discourage you that it can't be done. It's just, you know, it's a difficult thing. And the companies that manage to get that to be their business model, you know, they're all about flushing a bunch of people through. And occasionally somebody rises to the top, but their failure rate is, you know, 90-plus percent, probably more like 99 percent. You know, and really...
That takes up too much of my time.
Well, exactly, exactly. But what Paul is saying there is that, like the pizza party program that Adobe packages the entire product on this, which, you know, anybody sees the former inner circle, if you don't have that, just let us know, we'll send it to you. But it's the pizza party thing is basically the same thing as doing a birthday party, except you don't have to wait around until September when their birthday rolls around. So you right? So you give them
right.
Yeah, you give them a pizza party, and you know. And by the way, there's the Krav adult MMA version of this. It's, you know, you do the, you know, the UFC night or whatever. You just have to make it sound like it's for them.
How do you get people to a pizza party?
Well, I mean, it's you know, the kid version is you give the kid a pizza party. And he invites all of his friends, just like it's a birthday party. And, you know, he brings 20 friends in. And then, you know, what Paul's saying is they then, you know, sell them the e-card because it creates a little bit of commitment to get them to come back in and get the parents to come back in, right?
You don't say anything about it ahead of time. You just get them to the pizza party, and then you talk to the parents, and they don't seem outraged that that's kind of a pain. Intent, or you say it's intent up front, or what?
Well, I will tell you, Carol, what we do is, and we give away birthday parties only because, you know, what we'll do is we'll talk to our parents and we'll say to them, please understand, we're giving you this because we like, you know, we like your son or your daughter, but we also are doing it so that we get new clients exposed to our center. We don't pull any punches about it. We tell them right up front, you know, and that way there's never an issue when we ask them. The biggest problem with it is if you got to get the first person to buy one. That's the hardest part. The first person, if you get the first person to buy it, then everybody else wants it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Again, the thing to remember on all ideas like that is that just because they didn't enroll today doesn't mean they're not going to enroll in May or they're going to enroll in September or they're going to enroll in October.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of my friends used to, I don't think he's doing it now, but used to do 50 to 70 enrollments a month, all from birthday parties. And if you would ask him, he would say that, you know, half of the enrollments were from direct mail and half of them were from birthday parties. The reality is 100% of the leads that he was generating was from birthday parties. And about half the enrollments were immediately after the birthday party, and about half the enrollments were sometime in the next 24 months. Because they didn't have a follow-up system where those people were getting postcards and emails and outbound telemarketing and so forth for a long time. But yeah, for any event like that, and you know, and the promotion is again just like a buddy day, or just like anything else. But it's easier to get Billy to bring his 20 friends for his birthday party at karate school, or for the pizza party he was given at karate school, than it is to get it to, you know, to get a student to generate a lot of friends to come to like a big open event.
Do you sometimes just get, you know, a kid just brings two of his friends and, oh my gosh, or how do you get them to bring a lot of their friends?
I let the mother take care of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the mother of the child takes care of that. We don't take care of that. The
And we find that, interestingly enough, is that the kids rarely bring any of his martial arts friends. He's always bringing his friends outside of that. So that's even a better deal for us.
I would say that a little differently, which is the students in the first 6 months are the ones that are the best target for it to begin with. Because, you know, your black belt kids and brown belts and so forth end up at a point, you know, which we encourage, of course, is that almost all of their buddies and peers are their friends at the martial arts school, right? And so that's why you want it to be, and again, it's why I like Toby's deal of the pizza party, is now everybody who enrolls, they give them a free pizza party. And Toby chip in on that, but talk about how you promote it. But now what happens is, you know, they don't know many people at karate school. And in fact, when we do the elementary school programs where we literally people in from a single elementary school, it's the one downside is suddenly all of their friends at school have already been exposed to karate, and they don't have a whole bunch of them that aren't, because they all kind of went to the program together. But I mean, it's a minor downside given the volume.
Well, that's
but,
a whole different way to approach it.
Sounds yeah, and see, it's well,
and
the
not
the
that
thing
I wouldn't
is, do well, yeah, I mean, you do all of it, right?
Right.
But the thing is, you're always better off with a warm lead rather than a cold lead. And the closer you can get to it being a, you know, a warm referred lead, even better. So anything that you can do to have the student who's there. And even if they're new, they're already bought into what you're doing, or they wouldn't have, you know, written a check and signed the contract and stuff, right? So, and, you know, your worry about them, the only time a parent ever gets upset is if she gets blowback from the mom about, like, how aggressively they were marketed to once they brought them in, right? So the only thing you've got to be careful of is not to call them at dinner 12 times back to back to back to hear them say no 12 times a day. You know, I don't think, you know, it's not that never, but it's hardly ever that anybody objects to direct mail. You know, it's occasionally somebody objects to email, but they can opt out, it's fine. Certainly, occasionally somebody objects to text messaging, but if they can opt out, all the broadcast text message systems that we're using, they all can do that. So as long as they can opt out, it's not a problem. But that's the only time I've ever seen blowback is all of a sudden, you know, here's a list of 32 kids, and the program director calls them every day for, you know, for 12 days. You know, and it didn't take good notes. So anybody who says no, or call me back in May, or call me back in September, you know, they get interrupted at Denver, you know, at dinner 5 days in a row. That's the only time I've seen blowback.
I have one more question, Paul. How do you make sure these people really show up?
How do you make sure they show up?
Yeah,
the same way.
Do you have to write them a lot, or you just talk to the mom?
No, I do it the same way as I would any other person who calls the school. You know, you call them and you set them up for their first appointment, you know, and then you call them the night before and remind them. If they don't show up.
I mean to get them to show up to the pizza party.
Oh, they show up.
They just do.
All
they
show up.
All you have to do is tell them that mom and she gets them there.
Yep. Well, we require that they have a waiver prior to them coming. So that way we get their phone number, their email address, and all of that information first. So that way, you know, it's pretty, if they fill it out, it's pretty sure they're coming.
Okay.
Well, and there's all kinds of iterations of that, but keep in mind what he's saying applies to almost anything that you do external. If I'm at a daycare, and I'm doing a little one-day class at a daycare, is I want the permission slips a few days ahead of time so that I have their contact information. If I'm at an elementary school, I want permission slips ahead of time. And in all those venues, people are used to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So So, you know, but if you're timid about that, or take no for an answer too easily, or don't follow up, you know, you end up investing a lot of time and energy without ever getting the results that you want. On the pizza party or birthday party or any iteration of that. Another thing that I've seen is volunteering to mail out all the invitations. So now, in addition to mom sending out the permission slip, you mail a nice full color, you know, glossy looking invitation to the deal with the map of the school, the directions, and, you know, the description that it's Joey's birthday. And of course, what has to happen in order for you to pay the postage and do that is mom has to bring you the list. And so that's another good iteration on that. And by the way, there's many, many different types of businesses that are built upon predominantly doing birthday parties. You know, I mean, Chuck E. Cheese's whole, you know, not their whole, but the vast majority of their business is birthday parties. But there's all kinds of others, you know, and having two young kids, so, you know, everything from gymnastics schools to the bounce house places where they have all the different contraptions. And what I'll tell you is, paying attention to it, they almost all suck. not at the actual birthday party, but at creating leads is, you know, I've seen there's two or three of them are big national franchises, and they have these full glossy, nice invitations that you know, the parents will mail out, and then it has all the lead contact information on there and the waiver, and what happens is they almost never collect it because they put a 16-year-old, $7-an-hour part-time girl who's at the front desk with her iPhone and doesn't even collect the stuff. And, of course, their whole business should be built around their collecting leads, and if their primary business is to sell birthday parties, when 30 kids come in, they should be selling birthday parties to, you know, 20 of them. But it's where the rubber meets the road at that point of contact that it falls apart a lot of times. You've got to be very careful.
Where the rubber meets the road, you got to what?
Well, it's where it falls apart a lot of times.
Oh, okay.
Because at that point of capturing the lead and then following up on the lead, almost everybody captures the lead, follows up with it for 5 or 6 days, but doesn't follow up with it for 18 months. And loses at least 25%, if not half of the effectiveness of the whole program. So you've got to be constantly on top of that as well.
Master Oliver?
Yes, sir.
One of the ways we've done collecting their information for the birthday parties,
mm-hmm.
we set up the party as an event on Constant Contact,
mm-hmm.
and then the people RSVP directly to Constant Contact, and you just make all the fields mandatory. You know, you have to fill them all out in order to, you know, to register to come to the party, or and then you have the information right where you use to email everybody out. So,
yeah. Does that what he's saying make sense to everybody?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Trevor, it was what I was going to say, too, by the way, is that, you know, obviously our we kind of have like three or four maybe tiers of this ability to collect data. Obviously, our you know, one objective is we want the host to bring in all the names and addresses. Another, like David was saying, is it's really useful to have a page where they can register, and you just send that link to the parents who then forwards that around to their friends, and they register right online. That's pretty useful. And we can also do that, obviously, not by texting. So, you know, we can text them that link, have them forward that link over to their friends. They click the link, and they go to the thing. That's what I was going to say, is it's pretty easy to do that stuff electronically now. And, in fact, there's even we're actually experimenting with a piece of software right now that we might be ready to talk to our folks about in a few weeks, where you can actually have them pay for something like that, too. So they could be like an e-card system online, where they send that link around to their friends or whatever, and they register for this thing for maybe $5 or $4.99 or $19.99 or whatever, and all that stuff. It's a different application, but it's kind of an extension of the same idea, you know.
Mm-hmm.
thank you very much.
Is this helping, Cheryl?
Oh, yeah. It broadens my perspective quite a bit.
Yeah. And, again, you can accomplish all of that other external marketing, but I think the key thing is that it's very difficult to do it by saying to somebody, come in here, I'm not going to guarantee you anything, and you're going to make $10 or $20 per deal, go start knocking on doors, here's the script. You can hire a full-time person and tell them, you know, 10 hours a week you're doing this activity, and 10 hours a week you're doing this activity, and by the way, you know, Joe or me or Jimmy Mack or whoever's going to go out with you and do it for the first chunk of time to show you how to do it. And then when we go out and do it, you know, we say, well, look, we just got, you know, 10 appointments, so let's use that as the baseline. And so when you go out and do it on Tuesday, for your first time on your own, you know, report back to me at 3 o'clock on what your results were, and let's see how that varies from what we accomplished. I mean, it requires that level of supervision. And it requires having a tracking mechanism to know what kind of results are really coming in, which is the only way you know if they're doing something or not doing something. Because human beings can come up with an enormous number of excuses for why something they didn't do didn't work. Right?
Right.
And it's hard to sort that from reality unless you follow behind them and look at where the rat cards are played. And by the way, without having full-timers, you know, I've done lead boxes and rat cards many times over the years. The problem was always, even if I got the guy to put 100 of them out to begin with, is they never thought about it again. And now 6 weeks later, the thing is out of cards and they didn't go back and do it and gave me lip service. And, you know, and then the door owner throws it away. So if you don't supervise it to the extent, you know, like in a multi-environment, today's our rat card day. You know, let's get out your list. Okay, it should take 4 hours to do that. So Scott, you go that way, and Bill, you go that way, and Sue, you go that way. And let's go replenish them with these cards. And by the way, here's 30 more, you know, holders for the ones that have been thrown away. And while we're at it, let's hit the businesses that we didn't have any opportunity to get last time. You know, you got to supervise it at that level, or it just doesn't get done.
Hadn't thought about it. You have to replenish the holders too.
Well, yeah. Well, once they're out, I mean, you know, once they're in placement, I mean, obviously the rule of thumb is you've got to have between 4 and 8 different versions of the cards out over the year. So if you just leave the same thing, the same color, out there, people start ignoring it.
Right.
Okay. So does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
And then and all of these things applies to the grand opening thing we were talking about. The main thing, and Toby, I've promised two other things, which, you know, our system keeps changing so many times, I don't even know how to do an attachment to it anymore. You know what I mean. Toby, you there?
Yeah, I am. What attachment did you use?
Well, I wanted to send everybody a spreadsheet of the grand opening marketing plan with dollars and cents and numbers and stuff. And I also wanted to send them a couple of examples of employee contracts, which I promised several people.
Yeah, just send them over to me. I'll send them on tonight.
Okay, I'll do that. But from the grand opening perspective, is obviously we've hit quite a bit of ground. But part of the outline of it is, again, start with the concept of whatever I would do over the next 12 months or the next 6 weeks. But what I want to do is walk through as if I don't have a lead database, which is it's a real head start, and as if I'm doing an opening from the ground up. And again, we'll do some follow-up on this because it's going to be a little bit more when we have more time left. But our outline has always been, and again, I'm going to go through this kind of quickly, but has always been draw the radius around the school. One of the things that you can still do in most places is you can do an 8.5 by 11, two-sided, two-color printed insert to the newspaper. That typically would be Wednesday or Sunday when all of the food ads are out. And in most places in the United States, there's a company that's called Red Plum. And so if you open your mailbox on typically Tuesday, sometimes Wednesday, there's a piece of direct mail that shows up in your it looks just like a newspaper insert, in other words. So a lot of times it's Domino's on the cover, or it's Target, or it's the local grocery store. And you can buy an insert into that zone. And a lot of times what that company does is you buy a zoned insert into the newspaper. And then what happens is for everybody who's not a subscriber to the newspaper, which is an increasing number of people, I've got my Spider-Man 4-year-old in the background. He's talking about these guys. So if you guys hear some background noise, that's me now. But many times you can buy that zoned down pretty tightly. And our grand opening plan was historically going to be 50,000 of those at between a nickel and 5 cents a piece. So if you're looking at budget then, 50,000 at a nickel a piece and 2,500 per insert. And what we would do is do two or three of those spread out a little bit. So the other thing we would do, and I like get members, so we have a better supplier for cheap full-color postcards, direct mail.
Now, if you're going to do the list, too, they're the best source that I know of.
Yeah, because they can pull a pretty good targeted list of, you know, adults or kids, whatever, you know, whichever target market you want. But historically, on a grand opening, what we've done is rotate an alternate week between the newspaper insert with Red Plum and the postcards. And so we would do, let's say they come up with a list of 5,000 targeted postcards. And again, this is not Every Door Direct. Tell me, have you heard of anybody having good results with Every Door Direct yet?
Well, I mean, it depends on how you define good. I mean, the results people are getting are the results that I think I would expect you'd get. It's a saturation mailing. You know, if you can get a half a percent response, I think you're doing great. You know.
Right. Well, I would agree with that. Have you heard anybody getting that kind of response?
Nothing any better than that. I think Mike was doing Mike had done a few of them and got somewhere around, you know, 0.4, 0.5%, something like that.
Yeah, he wasn't happy with it, but maybe he had unrealistic expectations. Here's, I think, the price comparison. The Red Plum thing is going to be a nickel to 6 cents a piece, and the Every Door Direct thing is what, 16 cents plus printing? So 18 cents maybe a piece. The advantage of Every Door Direct is it's a freestanding piece that shows up unlabeled, but they just literally go Every Door Direct and postage is 16 cents. You know off the top of your head what the minimum is for that?
Me?
Yeah.
For Every Door Direct or for get members?
Yeah, get members is 5,000 for Every Door Direct.
You have to buy the whole route. I think 2,000 is where they start at.
Okay. Okay. So I still would rather do the newspaper insert Red Plum thing than do the Every Door Direct. Neither one is targeted, by the way, other than by geography. So there's that, you know, that difference, other than the Red Plum is approximately a third cheaper. And it's in a newspaper insert that a lot of your target market are going to be looking for anyway, because it's, you know, Domino's ads and Target ads and newspapers, grocery ads. But what I was going to say from a grand opening list spending money is I would, let's take a six-week period of time. Week number one, newspaper insert. Week number two, postcard. Week number three, newspaper insert. Week number four, postcard. Week number five, newspaper insert. Week number six, eight-page letter in an envelope with a stamp. And the letter with the stamp would be to the same list as the postcard. And from a standpoint of dollars and cents, Postcard is going to about 5,000, maybe more if you can put it in the budget. Newspaper insert is going to about 50,000 if they have that number and put it in the budget. So the 50,000 pieces is going to be 2,500 to maybe 3,000. The postcards are going to be in the range of 2,000 per drop. So you've got, let's say, $3,000, $2,000, $3,000, $2,000, $3,000, $2,000. Again, this isn't cheap, but it is the way that you open a location and in the first 30 days have 100 active students. The other thing I would do at the same time is I would do all of the inexpensive marriage mail companies that I might not do on a regular basis, so Valpak, Money Mailer, et cetera, is I would saturate them as well. So let's say Valpak is 380 for 10,000, and let's say Money Mailer is 600 for 20,000. So maybe I do three zones with Money Mailer, and now I've spent $1,800, and that's, 60,000 households. Plus I do Valpak overlapping with more or less the same households. The lists are a little different. But let's say I do six zones for Valpak at 400 apiece, that's 2,400, and again get my 60,000 people. And what the key element of all this stuff so far is that you're getting in front of people 5, 8, 10, 12, 18 times. You literally want it to be where people are coming in and you say, how'd you find out about it? And they say, how didn't I find out about it? Everywhere I looked, I saw you guys, right? And so then what you want is the big balloon on the roof with the banner, the big banner on the front of the store, the stakes out on the road that you're going to get in trouble for with a banner strung between it, the bandit signs up and down the street, both directions, back and forth. Then you want the rack cards at every business in a mile radius. Plus you want 11 by 17 posters about maybe it's a charitable fundraiser you're doing in the front door of every business that you can talk into in that same area. Everybody know what I'm talking about with that? Like some of the schools in New York, they have, where you glue it on to the, to the wall where they're advertising concerts and dance events and local community activities, in the suburbs. It's, putting it at the door of the Baskin Robbins promotes a local community fundraiser. And sometimes you can also put it on telephone poles. You can do those kinds for that as well. So we pick up from there on some of the things. But if everybody's following so far, it's four pieces of targeted direct mail to a targeted list, two or three pieces of newspaper inserts and the red plum thing. The other thing, by the way, Joe, you may be on the call. Joe's on the call. Something that more recently he did with the grand opening, which worked real well, is the post-it note on the cover of the newspaper. Again, if you're in Washington, D.C., and the Washington Post has a million distribution, you don't want to be trying to buy that. But what you want is zip code targeted among two or three zip codes in the immediate area around the school. So we pick up from there. I haven't hit community outreach activities, elementary schools, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I was going to go is, if I know my intent is to open, let's say, in June or something like that, whatever it is, if I've got a 90-day horizon or a 120-day horizon or whatever the case is, I mean, I really love to have, a couple of elementary school programs every couple of weeks, kind of graduating the weeks before I get the thing open, I mean, if I can get occupancy to the building ahead of time. In almost all cases, you can do that, by the way. I'm sure everybody knows this, but if you're negotiating, space in a new shopping center or something like that, or a shopping center, and it's vacant right now anyway, and maybe they have to do a little build-out for you or whatever. In a lot of cases, you can just negotiate in the deal as you're getting the lease done that, your tenancy, the rent commencement date is X date, but they give you the keys to the joint now,
Yeah.
And in a lot of cases, in a location in Orange City, I was, they were meant to deliver the premises to me on like February 1st, and it ended up being like May 1st, but I had the keys like starting January 9th or something like that. So I literally went in with like, all sorts of signage on the inside of the windows. you know, big, you know, floor to ceiling, big poster boards, you know, with all sorts of signage on the inside of the windows, lawn signs and things like that. And I and we did a few jobs of direct mail to the, you know, to the cold list. And I literally would go there, you know, 3 or 4 hours a day with a folding table and chairs, where it was still a construction zone. I mean, you know, there's a wall torn down and nothing on the floors, no carpets or anything. You know, just doing intros. I'd sweep a corner out and just do intros, you know, in the afternoon. We'd set appointments up one after the other. But, I mean, I think that's a technique that's useful to get access to the place earlier. But I would love to have, like, some school programs that are graduating or that are getting near graduation the week or two before the thing even gets open, to have a big pipeline of those people to put them into the school, you know. So, I mean, those types of mass lead generation activities, the more of those you can stack up, the better. And it's a lot better to have, you know, a ton of activity going on and a ton of lead flow before you open, and then once the key goes in the door, you have, you know, 75 or 100 students in class already. That's a much better scenario than having the key go in the door, you know, having spent $30,000 on a build-out or $50,000 on a build-out and be starting at zero, you know?
Let's not skip over that one. Everybody, and I say everybody, you know, almost everybody, makes a mistake of being so enamored of the carpet and the mirrors and the walls and the, you know, the glass wall and all of that, that they spend a ton of money on build out without worrying about they've got to have 200 students in there. And again, go all the way back to 83 when I did all this stuff, I did with no money. And every penny that came in went back into marketing and you know, the facilities really looked pretty crappy. But what it ended up being the second or third location is the big blueprint on the wall. And I'd walk them over the blueprint and say, here's what it's going to look like. And by the way, the health subs used to do this all the time. They actually got in trouble with our regulations is because they would go rent a trailer and do a pre-sale, and if they didn't create enough cash to pay for the build-out, they didn't open, right? You know, the Covars, when they were opening a bunch of locations, actually had a trailer that they wrapped and go out in front of the facility to promote the facility. And the important thing is to, you know, to get 100 new students in there. And I've never opened a school where if I got 100 new students in there, I couldn't be at positive cash flow month one. But you want 100 in there the first month. And again, you know, if you have a portion of your school that's floating around, you know, either at, you know, less than 150, 200 students, or if you have a program you're launching, the important thing is not to do it slowly, you know, because slow growth from zero will kill you. The thing is to go out and you know, beat the drum and put a lot of people in. Part of the logic of be out in every elementary school, be out at every community event, be out at all the restaurants and the bars for the adult program, be out at the soccer leagues and the, you know, softball leagues and the, you know, billiards leagues or whatever the right target is. Plus, spend a ton of money. Plus, be real aggressive at visibility. Plus, be real aggressive at guerrilla marketing. Is the more places they see you, the better everything works. And the problem is when you're timid, a lot of this stuff doesn't work very well, but when you're aggressive, it all works pretty well.
Well, and in addition to that, my father, not just only the sort of, exponential effect of multiple increments, right? So like you said, that, you know, just kind of that, like, collaborative effect of how all that stuff works in the community. But inside the school, momentum creates more momentum, right? Like, it's just like doing a leadership launch. It's just like if you're launching a new program, you're launching an upgrade program, the worst thing in the world you can do is go put one person in it this week and two people in it next week and two people in it the week after. Because what happens is everybody who was skeptical, who is sitting over in the lobby with their arms folded, now you've just reinforced their skepticism that, yep, see, I told you, nobody was going to do this thing. Right? And they're not going to ever say it out loud like that, but that's kind of what's going on in their mind. And it's exactly the same thing with a grand opening. You don't want to have, you know, three students in class on day one or day two or day three or day four because they're all kind of looking around going, man, this isn't a very popular program, you know, there really is anybody in here doing this thing, you know. What you want is the opposite. You want the thing just packed full of people on day one so that everybody goes, man, this is awesome. Look at all these people. This is a great, you know, everybody's really excited about this program, and, man, we better get our enrollment and everything finalized quick so we get a spot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That was the one thing that I did really well, totally by happenstance, when we did the Florida Grand Openings, was we knew enough to make sure that we had a ton of people in the door on day one. And we literally had three classes a day of white belts, 3 days a week. So, you know, we had enough intros, and again, we sold it really cheap, and, you know, we did a lot of things wrong at the time. but the one thing, in retrospect, the one thing I saw that really made everything work well, even though we executed very poorly on the sales, on a lot of pieces of it, the one thing that really made it a success was we had so much volume. We had so many people that were there that literally it was, you know, literally, I mean, this is not a joke, literally I had a lead box sitting on the front counter, and I had a class of, let's say, 35 white belts, and I had another class of 35 coming in, you know, 5 minutes later, and I just didn't have time to do intros, and I said, listen, here's how the program works. Here are all the forms. Go give these all to your parents. Everybody just stick your form with your check in the lead box up front, you know, stick it in the slot, and I'll give you a call later and get everything else done. You know, I mean, literally a couple times that's what I had to do, you know, so, and testings were the same way.
Well, that was the results we got from the elementary school program. Stand up in front, say drop a check off at the front, and we'll get the paperwork later. Something that you said, that you brushed over it, and I want to emphasize it because Eric and I are having this problem, is you want to make sure that you go in with a schedule of classes that is all about teaching first intros, second intros, and getting the new students start off well. Not, you know, don't go in and try to replicate the schedule at your other school. And you said 3 days a week is part of what you can do is you go in and after the first two or three weeks of this stuff is now you pretend you're running a school that's been there for 5 years. And all of a sudden, you've got the guys so busy being busy that they're not marketing and selling. So you've got to be really careful to have a ton of intro time and a ton of beginner classes. The other secret, by the way, is the upgrade program. Is the way you fund all this stuff is you've got to put a little bit up into it to begin with, but then what happens is you have 100 people in month one that are all renewable in month two, and 100 people in month two that are all renewable in month three, and the cash flow you can generate at least by month three and four is just staggering. So, you know, imagine, I mean, the number that's held out for years is 100 new people, 50 to 75 of them can be renewed if I put the right emphasis on it. Of those 50 that renew, let's say that 10 of them pay in full, so that's $100,000. And let's say that 40 of them pay $500 down, that's what, another $20,000. And all of them bump their payment by $100. So now it's an extra $5,000 a month in billing. So that $100, if they were paying $200, was $20,000. Bump it by $100 is another $5,000. No, I'm sorry, $4,000. So now you're at $24,000 in billing from that group. Plus, you're at $120,000 month three in cash. And you know, some of that goes in the bank, and some of it pays for everything to look nice because it looks crappy so far, let's say. And a lot of it goes back into marketing to keep the momentum going. But, you know, I literally, again, 30 years ago, but we've replicated it over and over and over again, you know, I paid for location number two from location number one and location number three from location number two. And location number two was 120 days later. So location number one was producing a flood of cash to fund the second location and so forth. So... And again, you can do that with an established location as well, but the problem with an established location is it's so easy to get bogged down in the day-to-day activity of running the school that you're not focused on marketing and sales. And it's a lesson for everybody to learn. You've never got to lose the marketing and the sales piece of the whole operation.
Well, and it's really, this is totally off topic, and we're totally out of time. But if you think about it from a 40,000-foot-in-the-air perspective, really the marketing and the marketing piece of this business is really the only piece of this business that has the size of leverage, right? I mean, you can only put so many people in the classroom and teach them to leverage that hour of your time, which in many cases is still pretty good leverage, right? I mean, if you put 25 people in a class or 50 people in a class, that's still pretty good leverage, 1 to 50.
Mm-hmm.
But the marketing piece of it is what gives you infinite leverage on the return on your investment, the return of your time. So everybody in this industry who, you know, well, let me say it differently. Those in this industry who want, you know, infinite leverage of their personal time, they will achieve that through mastering the skill of acquiring new customers and systemizing that part of the business. So, I mean, that's part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. We are over our time limit. So, any last quick question? Anything that we haven't touched upon today? I will continue to feed, and Sylvia, I'll send you out the attachment. I'll feed out a couple of versions of the employment contract. And again, my disclaimer is that we're not providing legal advice, and every state and province and country is all different. So you've got to make sure that, you know, just because I got something cleared in Colorado 20 years ago doesn't mean it's going to work in Texas or, you know, California. And some states, non-compete, you know, give up on it. It's all about the threat. You know, you're not going to be able to enforce it. And in other areas, you know, you'll find. So if you're in Texas, you're fine. If you're in California, you know, write it off.
Good luck, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But and Florida is fine, by the way. But anyway, that was all I had today. But I will promise for us to do a follow-up to expand more on the grand opening, but also do the launching the kids program and relaunching the kids program, marketing to you, because there's an awful lot of community outreach. And the thing that you're doing with the internet marketing is especially important for anybody who's targeting the adult market, although it's important for everybody. And what I would say, the community outreach, elementary schools, churches, et cetera, is extremely important for anybody who's targeting the kids market, because it is the place where you're going to get an overwhelming amount of traffic if you do it halfway right. Okay, well, if there's no immediate quick question, we're about 10 minutes over our allotted time.
Okay, fantastic, guys. All right, we'll chat a little bit. Remember that that next internet webinar is tomorrow, and it's mostly we're going to finish up on design, and I've got some major shortcuts for everybody, and then we're going to put a serious focus on search engine optimization and getting the site found by Google. So lots of stuff coming on that.
Do you have a quick suggestion on a relocated location on getting Google to get the new address proper?
The only thing that I know of is just go to Google Plus Local and claim that account,
mm-hmm.
and that now links out to the map and all that other stuff. But that's the only thing that I know of right now that has like a direct correlation with what they think, where they think you are. You know.
Well, I'll tell you what happens when you do that is they say they're going to send you a postcard to verify.
Right.
And then nothing shows up.
Yeah, in some cases they can also now, I think, send you a text message or call you personally. But yeah, usually they send a postcard.
Yeah.
I had that happen, and I had that happen down here when I had the second unit address, and they actually did send it. But they're kind of like the no customer service company. You know, you ain't talking to anybody at Google about your math. You know.
No.
They will organically. It will organically change eventually, but. Yeah, the Google Plus Local Map thing is the only thing I know of.
Okay, thank you.
All right, guys.
Bye.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.